This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this episode of LabCast. Today, we are joined by business leader, trainer, author, and venture capitalist, Mike Bosworth. Mike spent 16 years as the founder of Solution Selling. He's also written two books, Solution Selling, Creating Buyers in a Difficult Selling Market, and more recently, Customer-Centric Selling, which he co-authored in 2003. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here, Brendan. We are working on a new book that should be out in 2012, early, my partner Ben Zoldan and I. It's called What Great Salespeople Do, The Science of Selling Through Emotional Connection and the Power of Story.
Excellent. Cool. We'll definitely keep an eye out for that. Before we get started today, we have a few questions for you, but I'd love to give you a chance to sort of fill folks in a little bit more on your background and some of the things you're working on. I know you're currently the co-founder for two companies, so I'd be happy to hear about that as well.
Okay. Well, as most people know, I have been a sales productivity consultant and trainer on my own since 1983. And one of the primary reasons I went into sales training was to help the bottom 80%. Corporations truly suffer from the 80-20 rule, where 20% of their salespeople are bringing in 80% of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mission was, based on some behavioral research and stuff I learned at Xerox and the need development methodology I invented in solution selling, my mission was to help the bottom 80%. The top 20% didn't need my help. In 2008, I found out that, yikes, the 80-20 rule over 32 years had gotten worse.
Wow.
It was now 87-13, according to Sales Benchmark Index. And my partner and I realized that we'd actually been helping the best ones get better. And so now I think of the top salespeople, the 20%, the people that everybody wants to emulate and figure out what they do. They have three major skill areas, and most salespeople only have two of the three. The three major skill areas are, one, the ability to create a realistic vision in the mind of your buyer of how your buyer would use your product offering or your service in their world to solve a problem or achieve a goal. The second leg of the stool, and that comes into our discussion today, is the ability to manage a complex corporate buy process. The third skill of the top 20%, and we're not going to be talking about this today unless we do a little at the end, is the ability to connect with strangers. That's really the holy grail, and that's what's been missing. And so since 2008, I've been involved with one of my new companies is a company called Story Leaders, and we're actually training salespeople and corporate marketing people on how to connect with strangers. And we've done some, I think we've done four or five big programs for Oracle so far, and are truly rewiring their product managers. But that could be a subject for another day. One short note on the other business I'm co-founding these days, which is WeConcile, WeConcile, and my life partner Jennifer Lear is one of the world's best couples counselors, and we found that most couples need help, that most couples can't afford the $200 an hour a good couples therapist gets. So Jennifer is building, and we are going to launch in early 2012 a intelligent website called WeConcile that's going to help couples improve their intimacy and resolve their differences, where they don't have to incur the expense of a therapist. They can do it 24/7 in the privacy of their own homes, and we're very excited about it. We have six beta couples going through it right now, and we're getting amazing feedback.
Wow.
So that's what's going on in my world.
It's a bit of a change of pace on that one, huh?
Oh yeah, but it's fun, and I think it's. I'm just getting so excited about it, I can hardly stand it because the feedback we're getting is so good on it. So.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about, and you mentioned this before, briefly before, about the topic we're going to talk about today. We were talking about buyer experiences. Today we're going to talk about a presentation that you actually put together called Buyer-Oriented Pipeline Milestones as the Foundation of a CRM Implementation. A great place to start is just sort of talking about maybe the genesis of where that presentation came from. I know as perusing through it, you said a lot of companies do have milestones, but they're very company-centric, and we're talking about more of a buyer-oriented approach. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it's interesting because the company that hired me to do this was an open-source CRM system. And so they had all of their clients in, and, you know, their clients are struggling with trying to implement CRM, and so the audience was, it was sponsored by a CRM software company, but the audience was CRM clients trying to implement CRM systems in their companies.
So the first question I had for you is, you know, you point out some of the complaints a lot of people, have about CRM. I thought that'd be a good place to sort of get the ball rolling here. What are some of the most common complaints when it comes to CRM?
Well, from management's point of view, they complain that there's low compliance, and the salespeople complain that it's really a waste of their time when they compare the amount of time and effort they have to put into it to be in compliance versus the benefit they get out of it. So neither side is happy.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So in regards to, I guess, sort of finding the root of some of those complaints, really the crux of your presentation is about how many organizations have very company-centric pipeline milestones, and what you're talking about is really sort of flipping that to a more customer-centric approach. Can you explain a little bit more about exactly what that means?
Sure. Every CRM system is built to allow the company, the user company, to put whatever pipeline milestones they want in that system. And, typically, there certainly were no salespeople that ever raised their hand and said to management, I think we need a CRM system around here. You know,
right.
With today's technology, most salespeople can easily manage a contact database of their own, or even the company can have a contact database. But I think the number one reason management has wanted CRM is visibility into their revenue, into their forecasting accuracy. And if you go around most companies today, even today, a VP of sales will do a forecast, and when the CFO gets it, the CFO kind of glances it over and then goes into his drawer and pulls out his own trend analysis and his own numbers. And we find a lot of CFOs are doing their own sales forecasts, which means all that time and effort put into CRM wasn't taken seriously. And the reason it isn't being taken seriously is it's in the opinions of salespeople, and most of the salespeople complying with these systems, they're doing it just because they kind of have to get their to keep their job. I mean, we've even had some companies tell them that they can't get their expense checks until the CRM system is up to date. So, I mean, if companies are having to lean on salespeople to get them to update the CRM system by threatening to delay their expense reimbursements, that's saying that there's huge reluctance on the part of many, many, many salespeople to do it. So, I mean, all I can tell you is that, salespeople take the path of least resistance, and if you could show a salesperson something that would help them sell more business, they would use it. So I guess from my perspective, the vast majority of salespeople I know don't think they're getting value out of their company's CRM system.
So those are some problems. Those are some, like you said.
Those are some complaints, and If you look at the expectation, I mean, why did these companies implement CRM in the first place? Probably the number one reason is forecasting accuracy. And then there's lots of logical things like, well, we can access information from a single application, any of our people, any of our channels. We get a history of accounts and deal progress. We can track the salesperson's activity and provide coaching suggestions, et cetera, things like that. So, I mean, they all sound like pretty good reasons, But then if you look at those reasons, the forecasting accuracy and the history of account deal progress and tracking a rep's activity and providing coaching suggestions, those are all highly contingent on the pipeline milestones. In other words, what are you tracking about your deals that's going to improve your forecasting accuracy and give you account and history deal progress and things like that? And we find that management, you know, the people who funded these systems are not happy with, you know, what they're getting out of it. And I think, you know, if we really get down to it, it's the pipeline milestones are really the key to making it or breaking it with CRM.
So what are the right milestones then? Is it an issue of them just having the wrong goals?
Well, the vast majority of pipeline milestones that we see companies using are milestones that reflect what the company did, which means that it's input by a salesperson, and so it's a salesperson's opinion. So a typical company-centric milestones would be we engaged, we had a first appointment. We investigated their needs. We presented our offerings. We did a demonstration. We presented our value proposition. We did a proposal. We're in negotiation. We're negotiating with purchasing. These are all steps that you would find in a lot of CRM systems, pipelines. And then what they do is they just kind of have a linear, almost automated way of forecasting based on the percent of those steps complete. You know, so engage, they give it a 20%, investigate needs, at 20%, present offering a 30%, and they just have these forecasting systems that based on the number of vendor-centric milestones that the salesperson says we have accomplished, they're doing forecasts, and it's no wonder that the CFOs aren't getting a forecast that means anything. So the questions that I ask my clients over the years about their milestones is the first one, do they reflect what you have done, or do they reflect the buying process of your potential customer? And the vast majority of the time they admit that it's what they have done. So the pipeline milestones have no reflection on the customer's buying experience. Most of them aren't institutionalizing best-selling practices because they really don't even know what their best-selling practices are. And most of them rely on the opinions of salespeople. And then the final question is, I would say to a senior executive, if there's a major opportunity on your sales forecast that was going to make or break the quarter, how would you audit the progress on that opportunity? And I haven't had an executive yet say they'd go into the CRM system. What they pick up the phone and talk to the rep and they talk to the sales manager. In other words, when they really do have to audit an opportunity, they know that based on those milestones and the way they're getting updated, it's no place they can go for information.
So what are some examples then, I guess, of some customer-centric milestones? And how they differ from, you know, the more vendor-centric approaches that we've been talking about so far?
We've been talking about the buy cycle since 1976 at Xerox. What are the steps that your customer goes through when they buy? And so I'm going to list off some steps in a buy cycle, and then as you listen to these steps, ask yourself, is there some way that these could be our pipeline milestones rather than the typical ones of investigating needs, presenting offerings, demonstrating value propositions and proposals and things like that? So the first step in most buy cycles is we say they're coming from not being a buyer. And so we start with the step of not looking. And one of the biggest challenges for marketing departments these days are to get people who are in the targeted market to go from not looking to looking. And the way the buyer would let us do that is by saying, tell me more. And so the first step the first buyer-oriented pipeline milestone would be curious. where they demonstrated curiosity about our offering, about our company, about our customers. The next step is the buyer is willing to open up and share with the salesperson a goal or even admit a problem. Now, that's a pretty significant step because it pretty much says that they have to trust the seller. The next step is the buyer willing to converse about both constraints and solutions? Can we get into a solution discussion that we can document back with the buyer? So you could call that step a solution discussion, maybe. The next step is, can the buyer visualize using your offering in his or her world to achieve a goal or solve a problem? Okay. Next step is, will this buyer give you, the seller, access to all the key players necessary to get the decision made? Will they give you access to purchasing or procurement? Will they give you access to the CFO? Will they give you access to the IT department if they have to bless it, or the HR department? That's a pretty easy step to audit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And it has to do with the prospect being willing. The next step is the buyer has had satisfactory proof that your offering will meet their vision. That's pretty binary.
Mm-hmm.
The next step is the buyer now understands the value of buying your product. They know that they're going to spend X and they're going to save Y, and they see the value. That's pretty easy to document back in writing. Next step, the buyer understands implementation responsibilities. Next step, verbal approval. Last step, they signed a contract. Now, if I had a pipeline full of those steps being accurately updated, if I'm a senior executive and I'm in the last few days of the quarter and there's a big, giant deal out there that I want to audit, I can go into the correspondence for that client, between my salesperson and that client, into my CRM system, and I can say, oh, yep, there's the problem he admitted. Oh, there's some of the constraints he's worried about. Oh, there's the solution he visualized. Oh, on this date, he actually got specific. He needs A, B, and C to do D. On this date, oh, he gave us access to the HR department. On this date, oh, there's confirmation that he says, yes, he believes our product will meet his need. So all these things are in the correspondence. You don't have to call the salesperson and say, so what do you think's going on here? Are they going to close? You've got customer or prospect correspondence where you can audit these steps. It makes a huge difference.
So just by sort of changing, you know, the focus of those milestones, suddenly you have access to this information. It just adds value to your CRM system overall and the value that you're getting out of it just by kind
exactly.
of tweaking the way you're looking at things.
Right. And it's basically just breaking down those steps and confirming them all in some kind of correspondence. You know, most clients these days are using email. And so, you know, the sales executives can go in there and see what's the customer's goal. Gee, what's their vision of a solution? What's the payback that they are signing up for? Oh, yes, they've had proof. So it's built around what the customer needs to do to buy versus what the salesperson said he did, like, you know, investigating needs, presenting offerings, doing demonstrations and stuff like that.
So is this a good time then, I guess, to now look at what is the ideal B2B customer experience that people should be looking at?
Well, this comes from the top. The publisher of Selling Power magazine, Gerhard Schfantner, a number of years ago said that the CEO's definition of sales ends up being the DNA of the customer's experience. So these are kind of leadership principles, okay, that I've seen the best companies do. And I'll just read some off to you. These are statements about our potential customers. In other words, these are statements, a stake in the ground that a company is saying, here's how we're going to treat our customers. All right? First one. Our potential customers will be allowed to be curious about how we've helped similar job titles with similar issues. Parentheses before we give this 200-deck PowerPoint presentation. Our potential customers will be given an example of a success story only when they ask us to tell them more. In other words, we're going to tell them based on their agenda, not our agenda. Our potential customers will be asked questions about their current situation only after they've admitted a problem or shared a goal with our salesperson. Until they've admitted a problem, we're not going to start taking them through some questioning model. Our potential customers will only be offered potential solutions that empower them to retain control of their problem or goal that we offer, right? No more vaporware and no more, oh, I think we can take care of that for you.
Right.
All right. We're really going to have a product that we believe will empower them to meet their needs. They're still going to have to confirm that they had proof, right? That was one of the steps. Our potential customers will only hear facts about our company's credibility rather than marketing hyperbole. In other words, we're not going to tell them we're the leading provider of ABC. If the Wall Street Journal said we're the leading provider of ABC, then it's a fact. We'll tell them.
Right.
And our potential customers should experience our salespeople as individuals with the desire to help them achieve their goals and solve their problems by using our products.
Simple.
Yeah. I think sometimes the best things are simple.
Sure.
So the way this process like this gets audited is basically between the normal correspondence between the seller and the buyer. And one thing we do know about top 20% salespeople is they're good letter writers. And if you can't audit it, you really can't automate.
Right.
And that's the big problem with most CRM systems is there's no real good way to audit.
Okay, Mike, so, you know, my last question, I'd love to get some insight from you per your presentation. Once you sort of have articulated what the ideal B2B customer experience should be, you can then go through the process of documenting, your buyer's story via your CRM system.
Correct, and it's been my take for years that the best salespeople write good letters, and they're basically reflections of the calls, of the discussions they've had with their buyers. And if those letters are built around the buyer's buying process, then anytime senior management wants to audit a particular deal at forecast time, all they really have to do is go in and audit the actual correspondence between their salesperson and the prospect. And so we have an example of what that might look like. And this one's from a story leaders workshop. And so if you've got any way to post this one up where people can actually go look at it, Brendan,
sure.
I'm not sure.
Sure.
But we have a card system in story leaders where we teach salespeople how to build stories and then how to attend their buyer stories. And they're done by color. So the yellow card is the point of the story and the green card is the setting. The white card is the complication. The blue card is the turning point, and then the red card is the resolution of the customer's issue with whatever you're selling. And so we have this example letter that if you can post for people, I think they'll get a real good idea of how we can attend the buyer's story and then document it back to the buyer and get the buyer's confirmation that, yes, you understand my needs, and, yes, I believe that what you're offering me so far might help me achieve my needs.
Yeah, absolutely. We can post that. We'll post that. Those who are listening to this podcast right now will be able to find a link right below the player. They can click on that and check that slide out for themselves.
Fantastic.
Well, Mike, that's all the questions that I have for you today. I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it, and hopefully we get to do this again sometime soon.
All right, Brendan. Thank you.
Thank you.